Today, mortgage arrears climb as household budgets decay. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Problem home loans are now at their highest level since the aftermath of the global financial crisis, according to Standard & Poor's recent report, released with data to the 31st of March 2019. Concerningly, Standard & Poor's says little relief is in sight. And of course, they're looking at securitized loans, those that are packaged up and sold off, which tend to be of better quality compared with ordinary mortgages. So we can assume that the broader market is even worse. The report found that the Australian residential mortgage-backed securities, the RMBS sector, deteriorated in the first quarter of 2019 as debt serviceability pressures mounted. Unusually, arrears have been rising towards previous highs, despite stable employment conditions and low interest rates. The credit agency's quarterly report on Australian home loan arrears found that an array of monetary and fiscal policies that have been unleashed in recent weeks may not improve the situation for many stressed borrowers. S&P Global says that this is particularly true for those who have already slipped into the long-dated or 90-day plus arrears category. They say longer-dated arrears have shown no signs of improvement as borrowers in this category have nowhere to go in the current lending environment. Longer-dated arrears now accounted for half the problem loans compared with less than 40% during the previous recent peak in early 2012. After the GFC strangulation of credit markets had hit, interest rates had risen and unemployment had started to tick up. And Standard & Poor's said that positive announcements such as this week's RBA rate cut may help sentiment, but it was uncertain how they would affect mortgage arrears, particularly those in the most advanced stage, which continues to reach new highs. APRA's removal of the 7% interest rate floor will, they say, mean that most households will actually unlikely get any significantly increase in their borrowing capacity. The changes could help at the margin, particularly low-income households and first-time buyers who could borrow closer to the maximum limit, although, of course, expense verification processes will still affect access to credit. The low and middle income tax breaks may provide some short-term relief, but they will have minimal long-term impact on debt serviceability for most borrowers. And more rate cuts, which are expected now, to an extent they are passed on, may provide some relief in the short term, but the effect of rate cuts, they say, is likely to be smaller than in the past, given the high level of household debt. And of course, the proposed first home deposit scheme, they say, may help to stabilise property market sentiment and vendor confidence in the short term, but it's less likely to affect arrears performance, which is more sensitive to debt serviceability pressures. And policy certainty around proposed property-related taxes, in other words, what Labor had proposed, could help stabilise property market sentiment and vendor confidence in the short term, but it is less likely to affect arrears performance, which is more sensitive to debt serviceability pressures. S&P said that there were several interesting differences compared with the previous peak of prime loan arrears, which occurred in March 2012, with current conditions much worse in many areas. Household debt is much higher. Underemployment, people in work but looking for more, is also higher. And wage growth is lower. This is a nasty cocktail. So they showed one really interesting chart, which is just where Australia stacks up in terms of high household debt. We're second behind the Netherlands at 200% of disposable gross income. Hi, it's Liz Interruption. But if you're getting value from this post and have not done so, please consider subscribing to this channel or ring the bell for custom alerts. Plus, please consider supporting our efforts. You can make a one-off donation via PayPal, here's the link, or subscribe via Patreon for as little as $3 US a month or more to get access to exclusive additional content. Alternatively, you can also donate using Bitcoin, here is the QR code. The links are in the comments below. I really appreciate your support, which enables us to continue to make more great content. Thanks very much. Now, back to the current show. So they showed that the default rates were rising and that a greater proportion are now above 90 days in arrears. In fact, 90-day plus now comprises 53% of total arrears. And that's higher than back in 2012, when 90-day plus arrears were just 38% of total arrears. Whilst non-conforming arrears are at record lows, regional bank arrears are at record highs. And this can be explained by, firstly, regional banks having to open their doors to more risky loans to try and maintain market share, and secondly, their greater use of securitized facilities than previously. Another key trend Standard & Poor's identified was the narrowing gap between investor and owner-occupied arrears. Traditionally, investors have enjoyed a better credit record than owner-occupiers. However, the prudential tightening around the investment sector has driven up interest rates and reduced access to interest-only loan rollovers. And they showed that 50% of interest-only loans will convert to principal and interest repayments by 2020. So the interest-only conversion has some way to run yet. So they show that bank prepayment rates have fallen in the last couple of years, and they say that slowing prepayment rates indicate debt serviceability and refinancing pressures, and of course a reduced ability to refinance interest-only loans may have created some repayment shocks as more borrowers are now on an amortizing schedule. One observation is that the highest default rates are sitting among loans who've been around for a number of years. And in a way, you'd find that surprising because, by definition, people who've been repaying their mortgage for 4, 5, or 6 years should have their balance reduced and the value of their loan significantly lower. However, thanks to first refinancing, second falling property prices, and third very flat income and rising costs, more households who've held loans for longer are definitely in stress. And we see that in our mortgage stress data too. Not surprisingly, the study found the resource-rich states hit by the mining construction downturn and the sharpest and longest house price falls have significantly higher arrears rates. Western Australia and the Northern Territory have arrears rates of more than 3%, which is more than double the national average. So the highest arrears are in the Northern Territory at 3.31%, up 0.16%, in Western Australia at 3.03% and up 0.16%, followed by Queensland at 1.88%, up 0.03%, then South Australia at 1.6%, down just slightly. Victoria was 1.39%, New South Wales 1.24%, and Tasmania at 1.15%, and the ACT at 1.17%. And many of the highest risk postcodes align with DFA's mortgage stress analysis, as you might expect. The ACT and New South Wales have the lowest levels of problem loans for now. But of course, we would add this may change as the economy continues to weaken in the eastern states. And Standard & Poor's concludes that for as long as employment does not deteriorate, the credit worthiness of its RMBS sector was unlikely to be severely affected. And that is, of course, the big open question, as we're expecting unemployment and underemployment to rise significantly ahead, especially in the eastern states. And this is further evidence of trouble in the mortgage belt. And just a quick word on New Zealand. S&P says that the high household debt levels make some New Zealand borrowers more vulnerable to rising interest rates and falling incomes. The loan-to-value restrictions have been relaxed recently in light of slower growth in household debt and house prices. The proportion of mortgages going to households with high debt-to-income ratios, however, has fallen in recent years. And the Reserve Bank of New Zealand has proposed to gradually raise bank capital requirements to increase the resilience of the financial sector. And house prices in Auckland, they say, have declined slightly, reducing the likelihood of a large and disorderly price fall. Well, we'll see, shall we? I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.